Welcome to the Far and Beyond podcast, hosted by the Contracts and Fiscal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School, the podcast where we navigate the ever-shifting landscape of federal procurement and fiscal law. I'm Major Ellie Sewell.
And I'm Major Jason Floyd.
Together, we are your co-hosts, and today we're continuing our review of the RFO's deviations, this time with FAR Part 12. Let's start with the big picture. The rewrite does three things at once. Jason, what's the headline version?
Yeah, great point. First, it reorganizes the whole part, right? Six topic-based subparts become four lifecycle subparts. It goes through pre-solicitation, solicitation, evaluation, and award, post-award, and then you've got micro-purchases at the back end.
So it's following what the rest of the FAR is basically doing.
You got it. Second, it absorbs the simplified commercial buying procedures that used to live in subpart 13.5, plus the micro-purchase machinery from the old FAR Part 13 straight into Part 12. So a commercial buy at or below $9 million can now run start to finish without ever leaving Part 12.
And three is the one that everyone quotes.
That's right. This is the big clause cut. So roughly 30% of the provisions and clauses associated with commercial acquisitions are now gone. The anchor of that cut is the deletion of two master clauses, 52.212-3, which was reps and certs, and 52.212-5, the contract terms required to implement statutes and executive orders.
I know that's going to make every contract like several pages shorter.
100%.
Those were like 7 or 8 pages long. They were long clauses.
You got it.
So let's start at the beginning. Were there any changes to definitions of terms and concepts in FAR Part 12?
Not really, except for one interesting tidbit. So commercial product, commercial service, COTS, all that stuff, all still defined in FAR 2.101. The Part 12 rewrite did not redefine any of those things, except construction is now inside the definition of commercial service.
So interesting.
Yeah, it's nice, right?
Yes. We'll
get to what that means though later. So COTS is still a subset of commercial products. Like, you know, all COTS items are in fact commercial, but not all commercial items are COTS.
I saw that. So construction is now within the definition of commercial services in section 2.101.
Yep. And that's why 12.200 Bravo and 12.203 Charlie 3 say that when you acquire construction as a commercial service, you still need to comply with Part 36 for construction and subpart 22.4 for labor standards.
So this is just an added flexibility, not a labor standards exemption. So the Davis-Bacon, the Service Contract Act were applicable and the Part 36 construction procedures all continue to govern.
You got it. It's just no longer exempt from the definition of commercial service by policy like it used to be.
I saw that there was no longer a gigantic table about inapplicable laws.
Yeah, so the old subpart 12.5 was a long codified enumeration of the laws that Congress made inapplicable to commercial, subcontract, and COTS acquisitions. Think stuff like drug-free workplace, contingency fees, the COTS Buy American domestic content carve-out, all of that used to be fixed in regulatory text. But now, instead of having that list in the FAR itself, we have a website. So if you go to acquisition.gov/inapplicable laws, all one word, that list of laws that does not apply to commercial contract or to COTS and to buys under the SAT, you can find that list there.
So they just moved it out of the text, but it's still on the same website, basically.
You got it. Yep.
I guess the upside is that it's always current. Downside is that the practitioner point, it's a continuously updated source with no federal register footprint until rulemaking. So the list can change without the usual paper trail. So probably needed to snapshot it for record keeping purposes.
Yeah, I think so too. And speaking of always being current, there's a new order of priority for mandatory sources. Subsection 12.200 alpha suggests that if a commercial product or service that meets the need is available from any of those priority sources listed in Part 8, like the schedules or GWACs or other government-wide vehicles, then the agency must buy from that source. So you only fall through to the Part 12 open market streamlined procedures if it's not available there. And that really elevates the whole use an existing vehicle preference that we used to have.
So interesting, because it used to be, for example, that the federal supply schedules were not always mandatory. You're saying that now it seems that they are?
That's exactly right.
Okay. All right, let's move on. Any changes to things like contract type or quality assurance, warranties.
Yeah, for contract type and quality assurance, nothing really new in there. Still need higher approvals to use contract types like time and materials and labor hours. But the standard ones are good, right? Firm fixed price and fixed price with economic price adjustments. The cost type contracts are still prohibited. And then for QA or quality assurance, we're still relying on the contractor's existing system. So nothing really new there at all.
All right, good.
Yeah, warranties though, that's an interesting change. So the old section 12.404 was a full treatment. It's sort of an exposition on implied warranties of merchantability and warranty for fitness for a particular purpose. It had the elements, the reliance test, all that stuff, right? Well, the RFO got rid of all that. Instead of being an explainer of sorts for the contracting officer, it just removed that and said rely on, you know, commercial warranties, including extended warranties for repair and replacement.
So do you think that was intended to be a substantive change, or could it be that the doctrine didn't change but the regulation stopped reciting it?
Yeah, I can't imagine it was supposed to be a substantive change. I think we still want those implied warranties, especially because it seems like that language is still gets into the contract through the clause at 52.212-4. It's just that you can no longer point a judge or the contracting officer to the FAR itself for that analysis.
What about other commercial terms?
So no real changes there. Things like data rights remain almost identically intact. They're just renumbered. And then the clause at 52.212-4, again, still talks about things like enforceability of unauthorized obligations, even though the language was removed from the FAR part. So again, you may just not be looking in the FAR itself for the language that you know and love. You may be moving to look to the actual clause.
All right, let's talk about a big change then. Where did the old FAR subpart 13.5 go?
Yeah, so this is almost a big change, right? So the RFO divides this now into two tracks within FAR Part 12. The threshold is at $9 million. For track one is if you're at or under $9 million, you use the procedures at 12.201-1. Those are mostly the same ones we've been using, so no new stuff there. And then for acquisitions above $9 million, up to $15 million for the categories listed in FAR 12.001 Charlie, like responding to cyber, nuclear, those type of attacks. Use the procedures at RFO FAR 12.201-2, which really just says use a combination of FAR Part 12 procedures in conjunction with FAR Part 15 procedures for an RFP or FAR Part 14 procedures for an IFB, invitation for bids. And the RFO states the preference is that, you know, use the request for proposals or the RFP. So again, no real changes there, just making that stuff explicit.
All right, so let's move on to commercial acquisition procedures. Any changes to the publicizing the acquisition?
Well, as we all know, it's no longer called a synopsis. We just have this generic term called pre-solicitation notice. So the old combined synopsis and solicitation technique from 12.603 moves to the new 12.202 Bravo with that new term. Otherwise, there's no real change there.
Just we had to be boring, you know?
That's right.
We had to be boring. Go back to the boring name. What about evaluations?
The one exciting thing here is that this part now expressly permits comparative evaluations. When I first started doing GovCon, I don't know about you, but I was actually surprised that this was not more widespread, like directly comparing offers or proposals to one another.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not new. It used to be located in FAR Part 13. Now it's just that it's specifically called out in FAR Part 12 and the practitioner album, probably to put more emphasis on the fact that KO should be using it.
Yeah. Let's flag two issues for litigators though. Two new potential areas for protest. First, late submissions. 12.203 Charlie 1 tells the KO to exercise good business judgment on whether to accept a late quotation or offer, referencing 52.212-1 Charlie. That's a deliberate move away from the rigid late is late rule, so I'm expecting protests to test what good business judgment requires and then also what documentation survives review.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's probably going to be incumbent upon the legal advisors to really suss out what or whether the KO thinks it's a good business judgment.
I'm so surprised that they changed that rule, that late is late, because that was just such a standard you always knew.
And it was super easy to do, right?
Yes, it was so easy. Yeah. So I know there was already an exception sort of written in there that the KO could accept a late bid, but yes, I'm surprised.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, second litigation or area for protest is comparative evaluation with no plans, no scores, no competitive range, right? So you get the speed that the KO might need, but there is a risk for the record. So I think our advice is, even though a formal plan isn't required, you still need to document the rationale, because we both know if it's not written down, it didn't happen.
Contemporaneous reporting.
Yep.
So this is a segment people came for. The two master clauses.
Yeah, right? The old architecture, which is like four different sections and those two giant clauses we talked about at the intro, 52.212-3 and 212-5, those are essentially replaced. So what is required then? Well, it's 52.212-1, which is instructions, 52.212-2, which is the evaluation, and then -4, which is the terms and conditions we all know and love.
So did we get rid of the requirements to do reps and certs?
Surprisingly, but maybe not surprisingly, no. I bet some contractors wish that were the case. But instead, they're now just a part of SAM.gov, as in, like, you won't have an active account if you don't go in and have a current reps and certs form completed in SAM.gov.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's just not part of the contract anymore.
Yeah.
So if the goal is to shrink the reg and get rid of stuff in the contract, there you go.
You already have passed through that gate to even get there.
Yep.
All right, cancellations.
Yeah, so this is new, right? The RFO contains a specific section outlining cancellations. It's section 12.303. The government now may withdraw, amend, or cancel a purchase order anytime before acceptance. The KO can actually ask for written acceptance of that cancellation too. And if the contractor disputes it or claims that it incurred costs while it began performance, not knowing that a cancellation was coming, then the KO can proceed to terminate under the new FAR 12.304. That's sort of the offer and acceptance model doing some real work.
All right, what about terminations? You just sort of said something that there's new info on terminations.
Yeah, so no real changes other than what we think alluded to in a prior episode, mm-hmm. which is we talked about the removal of that percentage of price and direct labor hour computation when there's that termination for convenience. So that's all gone, right? That mechanic now rides solely in 52.212-4 in those termination paragraphs. So when you're computing the commercial convenience settlements, you're going to cite the clause like you always have.
So let's talk about the last little part in FAR Part 12, micro purchases. This is kind of one of the bigger shifts too, because they brought some of this information in from Part 13 into 12.
Yeah, it's just a little confusing for me because they really shrunk it down. Essentially, they took that big old part out of 13. Now it's in section 12.403, and you find just a tiny bit of info essentially saying that these are the methods you can use, but there's nothing really new and there's not a lot of detail.
Basically, if it's below the micro-purchase threshold, you're supposed to be using the GPC.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest takeaway from that little section. But they cut a lot of meat out of it. And that's really what it just talks about in the GPC. Just the wild, wild west out there.
Yeah. We'll see how it comes in practice. Yeah.
Especially since they raised the threshold.
That's right.
All right. Thanks, Jason, for tackling FAR Part 12. I know there are a lot of changes in this section.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Ellie.
Thank you for joining us today in this episode of Far and Beyond. Please make sure to follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. We love to hear from our listeners, especially Jason. Please continue to reach out to us on Facebook and LinkedIn. The information can be found in the show notes from today's episode. The views expressed today are those of the presenters, not that of the Judge Advocate General's Corps, the Department of the Army, Department of the Air Force, or Department of War.